This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, do a special episode recapping the results of the Texas primary elections. Brandon Waltons and Carrie Cheshire will join me as we take a look at the statewide results, some surprising results there, as well as the results in the congressional races, state legislative races, and judicial races. Stay tuned. Welcome back, friends, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. As always, you can find us on the internet at www.texasscorecard.com. Well, it's election primary week. The elections are in the bag, and we do something special every time this rolls around and do a little bit of a election recap going across the ballot from statewide down to the local things, issues that folks in Texas need to know about. And to help me with that, I've got Brandon Waltons, managing editor of Texas Scorecard.
Hello.
And Carrie Cheshire, vice president for Texans for Fiscal Responsibility.
Howdy, howdy.
So, you know, if you go and you watch your 24-hour news network, all the coverage is about the Democrats mm-hmm. and things going on with Democrats and the presidential race. And of course, that is interesting. You've got this consolidation, basically all the candidates losing and dropping out, and you basically have Biden and Bernie, old washed up Democrat establishment versus old washed up communist establishment running against each other. And of course, that is interesting, but you don't see a lot about what happened further down the ballot on the Republican side. And so I just wanted to break that down for folks. Let's start looking at Texas and not miss the really truly significant statewide things. I mean, Trump won and won big.
Yeah, I think as the president would say it, he won bigly.
Right.
You know, horrendously commanding majority for Trump, like 94-95%. I think we're still having some votes come in. We're still going to have some military votes and other stuff. So nobody has exact hard and fast numbers on this. But a huge commanding majority for President Donald Trump, who is, again, you know, kind of beat everyone's expectations, I think, of mm-hmm. him running for president. Even the people who voted for him, I don't think, at the first time in the primary against Ted Cruz and all those other folks, I don't think they thought that he would be as good as he's been. Sure. For conservatives, for Republicans, and for the people of Texas, a huge commanding majority for Donald Trump that we didn't see for Republican presidents at all times. I mean, you did see George W. Bush have kind of not this kind of majorities. You did see his father, H.W. Bush, not having these kind of majorities.
Well, Pat Buchanan
in early
running against him. And
yeah, absolutely.
Things, sure. So John Cornyn as well. You know, these are things that are important, but, you know, you skip over it because it's such a big win. John Cornyn up in the 70s percentile,
yes.
Was. I mean, a big win.
Yeah, blowing out. Had a couple of kind of, you know, candidates who had put their name on the ballot. But, of course, coming through majorly, no real opposition in that race. Very interesting to say, though, you know, Kerry, is that you look at the ballots, right, that people had when they were going in to vote. On one side, you have the Democrats who, wherever you are in Texas, you're voting for somebody in this big presidential race, right, this big draw, a lot like Republicans were doing in 2016. This time, not so much. In fact, in many parts of the state, there wasn't really anything that particularly interesting to pull you to the polls. Nevertheless, you still see Trump having more people come to the primaries and vote for him than all the Democrat candidates combined.
Yeah, you see a huge turnout for Republicans, as you said, where for most Republicans, so like let's say you live in Tyler, Texas, mm-hmm. the things that you had on your ballot were the president, who is the incumbent and was going to win, and then you had like Railroad Commission and Court of Criminal Appeals and some local races. For the Democrats, you get to choose potentially the leader of the free world
yeah.
and a U.S. Senate candidate with a very contested primary over there with millions of dollars being spent on both. And instead, Republicans turning out, I think, 500,000 more people in Texas to vote in the Republican primary than the Democrats, and that's despite years and years and years of saying the big blue wave that's going to turn Texas blue.
Exactly.
Is coming.
And I don't like to look too much. Some people do. But, you know, trying to look at the primary and who voted in which primary and trying to extrapolate that. What does that mean for November? You know, I kind of caution against that. But, you know, in this case, you have to say, at the very least, 2020 is not going to be this slam dunk Democrat win that a lot of the national Democrats think it could be.
Yeah, I think what we're learning is that Texas is a state that Republicans have to work to win and have to fight for. Mm-hmm. It is very much contested, but it's still, you know, strongly a Republican state at this point. So you mentioned on the ballot the Railroad Commission race, and this is something.
Speaking of working to win.
Yeah. Well, yes. Speaking of working to win, this was a real shocker of the night for those who were, you know, if you're paying attention and looking at things that are just slightly down the ballot, Railroad Commissioner incumbent Ryan Sitton being defeated by a candidate who, I think, what, had raised like $15,000?
Not even. I think he had about 20 followers on Twitter, you know.
Yeah, proof that Twitter, yeah, proof that Twitter is not the, you know, yeah.
Well, I think all 20,
reflective of reality and
I think all 20 of those people voted for him. But, you know, yeah, you've got Ryan Sitton, who's got $2.2 million in the bank. You've got this guy, he's got like $13,000. Jim Wright. And I think for most people, I mean, you have to remember, people go to vote for people who ask them to vote for them. And Ryan Sitton, I think I got one piece of mail that had his name on it, and I'm like an 8R voter or something. I've never missed a Republican primary since 2010, my first time I was eligible to vote.
Everybody's going, wait a second, Kerry's really young.
Yes, yeah,
that's true.
But, you know, Ryan just did not run a real deal campaign. And to be fair, nobody really thought he needed to. Nobody had heard of this Jim Wright guy before. Ryan had done a good job on the Railroad Commission. People were reasonably happy with him as a statewide elected official. And kind of nobody saw this coming, but the ballot name Jim Wright, and people did not know that they needed to vote for Ryan Sitton, and so they didn't.
Yeah, very simple. Yep. I mean, it's, you know, they say if you're going to run, you either run unopposed or you run scared, you know, like you've got a real challenger at your heels, because sometimes you do, and maybe you don't even know it. Very interesting result there. Now, let's talk about the congressional races, because there were a ton of open congressional races, lots of retirements from Congress this cycle, and so you had these open races in pretty solidly Republican districts, and some very interesting results there. The president getting involved, and certainly, you know, folks definitely following his lead on these races. But let's break those down.
Yeah, well, you've got in West Texas, right? You've got Congressional District 11. I think that's a great place to start. This is a seat that was opened by the retiring Congressman Mike Conaway. And, you know, you had, of course, like you see in a lot of these open races, as soon as they announce they're retiring, you've got this flood of people who come in. I think there were 12 candidates in total, if I'm recalling off the top of my head. 12 candidates in total. A lot of the conversation, right, around, okay, if there's 12 candidates, you got to get 50% to win. Who are the two that are going to make it to the runoff? Surprising some folks, you actually saw August Pfluger, who was pretty much the establishment guy, who was actually endorsed by President Donald Trump a couple weeks ago, running completely away with the race. I mean, this was really surprising, is that even in a 12-way race, August Pfluger, you know, barring some sort of strange last-minute votes or something here, looks like he's going to avoid a runoff in a 12-person race over 50% of the vote.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when what we saw, and we'll talk about another race, it's a bit of a disappointment for conservatives in a second, but when you see the president get involved in these races, people say, okay, well, if he's good enough for Trump, he's good enough for me. I think it's kind of the answer.
Yeah, you did see the president's endorsement as a very strong force multiplier in all of these races, but that's what it was. It's a force multiplier. August Pfluger, you know, kind of from August on, had been spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in that race. He spent probably more money than all of the other candidates combined. He got a lot of that money from Jeff Bezos and Mike Bloomberg from the With Honor Pack, which we've written about at TexasScorecard.com, a very interesting thing that we ought to expect to be very much more active in the state of Texas. But the frustrating thing there is that, you know, conservatives in this district should have seen this coming, that Pfluger was out and campaigning hard, and conservatives were disorganized. It was only at the very end that they decided to activate and kind of band together to say that we have to stop August Pfluger, and it ultimately wasn't enough. And to be clear, we don't know that much about August Pfluger. We know that he's got a whole bunch of bad friends, and you're known by the company you keep, but he's also been endorsed by President Trump.
Yeah.
And he'll go in, he'll have a fresh slate of votes, and we'll see how he votes up in Washington. But you did see conservatives kind of fail to really organize in this race. You had a number of solid candidates who just were not able to put the funding together that's necessary to run. I mean, Wesley Verdell, who I think came in third, is a great example of that. But it just goes to show the candidates who win are the candidates who work. I mean, August Pfluger was out busting his butt, pounding the pavement from August all the way on, and it was ultimately successful for him.
Yeah, let's turn and focus. So up in the kind of Fort Worth area, mm-hmm. you had incumbent Congressman Kay Granger, who's, you know, been a little bit embroiled in some scandal and certainly pretty weak on life issues, has historically described herself as pro-choice, now describes herself as pro-life. There was certainly a room for a challenge there, and you had Chris Putnam, a local businessman, served on city council as a conservative. I mean, rock ribbed conservative running against him, her with a serious campaign. But there again, you see President Trump come in and say, I'm going to endorse the incumbent. And, you know, it just doesn't work out for a challenger whenever they're putting themselves up against the president like that.
Well, and you also saw the Washington swamp really rally around Kay Granger. This is something that should really frustrate conservatives, because you saw, you know, this is Kay Granger, who's described herself as a pro-choice Republican, who has campaigned as a pro-choice Republican, who has demanded that funding for Planned Parenthood be included in the budget as the ranking member of appropriations, but decides in December, when she's under the gun, to have I'm actually pro-life. Life, and I'm going to tell all my friends that mm-hmm. I am. And you saw the National Right to Life Committee and the Susan B. Anthony List both come in and endorse and shill for Kay Granger and her pro-life credentials in the race. Very frustrating if you're a pro-life Texan, if you're someone who had been a donor and trusted organizations like that up in Washington, D.C., that they would come and fight you with your own dollars on the life issue, because Kay Granger has been in Congress for, what, like 27 years?
Yeah.
And absolutely not been a fighter on the life issue.
Sure.
But instead, the legitimate groups up there going in a very swampy fashion, moving to brush up her bona fides.
Yeah. Interesting. You made a comment earlier before the show that apparently there was some polling out there where they had talked to people in this district who said, you know, hey, what do you think about these two candidates? And you would think that they would then conclude that they were going to vote Putnam, but then they didn't. They just didn't.
Yeah, you actually saw Kay Granger voters say that there were more people who had a high opinion of Chris Putnam, favorable opinion, negative opinion of Kay Granger, but then Kay Granger is endorsed by Trump. So you literally have voters saying, I don't like this woman. I think voting for her is a bad idea. But damn it, Trump, you said so, and I'm going to trust you. And they did. About 60-40 win for Kay Granger.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I don't even know what to really make of it. Very frustrating.
What to make of it is that I hope Trump endorses me if I ever run for office.
That's a good. Brandon, tell us a little bit about the Weingartner-Jackson runoff.
Yeah, another interesting seat up there, kind of in the panhandle. You have Congressional District 13, where open seat, and now you've got a runoff there between two candidates. You've got one where Josh Weingartner, who by far, you know, in the lead, wins first place in that. This is a guy who's a former lobbyist, a pretty swampy guy. There was a bit of a race for second going on during this campaign, and you had a gentleman by the name of Chris Ekstrom, who's been a conservative activist, conservative donor, up there, and Ronnie Jackson. Ronnie Jackson, of course, being a former doctor to Trump, and that was, you know, essentially a big part of his campaign, as you can imagine. The Trump ties alone to Ronnie really helped boost him up there, but, you know, in the final days before Election Day, you actually saw that Trump vote. And just like Kerry said, I mean, it really is a multiplier. As you saw the early vote come in before the Trump endorsement, it looked like him and Ekstrom were pretty competitive for second. Then Election Day, after that Trump endorsement, you see the effect of that. You know, it just absolutely boosted Ronnie, and he was able to secure that second place spot.
So Trump playing a really big role in that runoff as well. Let's move down and talk about, well, I guess CD-17, which is pretty interesting, there in Central Texas, and then CD-22 around Houston. I guess maybe start with 17. This is kind of an interesting one there with Pete Sessions trying to go back to Congress.
Yeah, so you've got Pete Sessions, who represented a slice of CD-17 before, but really kind of known more as kind of the Dallas Highland Park congressman, of course, defeated in the 2018 general election, now running for a portion of his old district and a lot of area that he never represented in Congress. this time around, coming in first place in that election, you did see Bill Flores, who's retiring, and his preferred successor, Renee Swan, come in the number two slot. What's frustrating for conservatives in this race is that George Heineman, who was a self-funding, bona fide conservative candidate who was running the most successful campaign, had a clear shot to move into that second place and be the conservative alternative to Pete Sessions. Instead, you saw a number of people choose to vote for Eleanor Vasali, who came into the race as an establishment candidate, actually had money from Bill Flores donated to her, decided then to move and run as a more conservative candidate, pledged to join the Freedom Caucus after Heineman made it a campaign issue and was running as a conservative. You know, Heineman voters and Vasali voters were the same kind of people. I mean, I've moderated three debates out there. I've talked to a ton of them. I spent a lot of time in College Station, and I know those people. And ultimately, if about 700 of them had moved over and voted for George Heineman, there would be a conservative versus establishment runoff. Unfortunately, that didn't happen, and there will be an establishment versus establishment runoff there between Pete Sessions, who has a not good record in Congress, but has worked with conservatives, and Bill Flores' preferred successor, Renee Swan, who has pledged to not join the Freedom Caucus and kind of be more of Bill Flores. So maybe you vote for Pete Sessions there. I don't know. We're going to see how these candidates try to campaign for the conservative vote.
But you see Heineman, runoff. I think it was like 1 point out of in third place. I mean, very close.
Yeah, very close.
Very close third there. Very disappointing result. CD-22, interesting race setting up for the runoff. We talked a lot about this race because Pierce Bush of the Bush clan was running there. Now, he comes in third place.
Big victory for America and the world.
Well, and this is a guy, I mean, this guy was openly, virulently anti-Trump, like marching in leftist protests against Trump like a couple of years ago, and then running for a Republican nomination for Congress. He comes in third place. Troy Neals, the local sheriff, who's been in a lot of hot water over comments about gun control and kind of being anti-gun, he's in first place. And then you see Kathleen Wall, who is self-funder, big Republican donor, getting into that race. So that's an interesting one that'll shape up as we head into the runoffs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break and hear a little bit about the Empower Texans Formation Fellowship. And when we come back, we'll talk about some of the state house races. Some very interesting things going on there.
Know a young conservative Texan interested in getting involved in the fight for liberty? Encourage them to apply for the Empower Texans Formation Fellowship, an exciting new opportunity for young conservatives to get hands-on experience with the public policy process. The fellowship is designed to train and form young political minds to be effective agents of change in Texas and their local communities. The fellowship is located at Empower Texans office in Austin and will run from June 1st to August 7th. Fellows will be paid $5,000 total for the duration of the 10-week fellowship. The application deadline is March 20th, and preference will be given to applicants who apply early, so act now. You can learn more at empowertexans.com/fellowship.
Well, that fellowship is a great opportunity to work with guys like Carrie and Brandon at Empower Texas.
Who wouldn't want that?
Yeah, neat opportunity. All right, let's turn our focus to the state legislative races. A lot of interesting things going on there. And most notable, you've got a couple of bad Republican incumbents staring down runoff elections.
Something conservatives can be very, very happy about from the election results, right? Not just one, but two. Incumbent, bad Republicans, some of the most liberal Republicans in the House, now find themselves in hot water. They're going to be facing runoff races. So you've got one guy, J.D. Sheffield, one of the most liberal Republicans. I mean, this is essentially a pro-abortion, pro-illegal immigration guy who's been down there, who's completely out of step, by the way, you know, with the values of the district. But, you know, for one reason or another, has been able to kind of hold on in that
local
seat.
Local doctor. Yeah. People are like, hey, this guy's one of us. He's a local doctor. Had a couple couple challengers running against him, and he actually coming in second place.
Exactly. So not a good position for him. He's going to be facing Shelby Slauson in the runoff in May. And on, you know, the other part of the state, you've got in East Texas, you've got Dan Flynn. This is somebody who was elected as a conservative, who was elected with the support of conservatives.
Used to have a very conservative voting record at one point in time.
And like, you know, many politicians, a bit of an expiration date on that, right? So we saw a complete shift. You saw a downward spiral. And now he's actually one of the people there who's one of the biggest obstructionists. He finds himself, he was able to eke out, you know, a first place finish, still not above 50%, though. So he's going to be facing off against conservative activist Brian Slayton in that runoff. And it's important to remember that, you know, if you're an incumbent in Texas, at least, and you find yourself in a runoff election, and not a great position to be in.
Yeah, I think we had tried to crunch the numbers, or you guys had kind of looked at it, and it's like something like 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the last time an incumbent in the Texas legislature survived a runoff election was in like 1987, but I don't know that for entirely sure. It was before I was born.
Say
I know
it
that
very
for
confidently.
Sure.
Yeah.
Say it confidently.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time,
but, I mean, and it's definitely the deck is stacked against these characters.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, you've already had a majority say, not this guy, right? So, like, if it's me, Brandon, and you, and the majority has said not Tony, and you go to a runoff with Brandon, well, it's more likely that they're going to choose Brandon, because 55% of the vote said, get rid of Tony.
Yeah.
It's the same way with Dan Flanders.
Otherwise, why not reelect the incumbent? The really interesting touch on the Sheffield race, the third guy in there is a Cody Johnson running there, spending bukus of cash.
Yeah, I believe a buku is about $1.2 million in this case is the measurement. Well, of a
multiple.
Buku.
I said bukus. So
oh, okay.
I don't know what a buku is. It's some division.
It's a large number. But yeah, it's very important because you see time and time again, you have people say this person's trying to buy the election. Well, you see time and time again, people do try to kind of buy the election, and it does not work. You cannot buy elections by just sending a lot of mail that says I'm great, vote for me, or putting TV ads up that say I'm the real deal conservative. You can't buy elections. People actually want to connect with people. They actually want to find a candidate who's going to fight for their values, or at least convinces them of it. And you can't just throw money at it and expect to win.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Turning to some of these open races, a big win for conservatives up in Tarrant County for the race to replace retiring state rep Jonathan Stickland.
That's right. Jeff Kaysen winning without a runoff, getting about 55% of the vote up there in Hearst, Euless, Bedford, in the mid-cities up in Tarrant County. Jeff was Jonathan Stickland's preferred successor. You see the strong conservative army that's built up in House District 92. Work to elect a conservative up there. Jeff Kaysen, somebody that we had endorsed, had been endorsed by Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, and we have very high hopes for him. But he does have very big shoes to fill coming in to literally sit in Jonathan Stickland's seat. Jonathan Stickland, a guy who's been a tireless and faithful advocate for conservative causes since his very first term in the Texas House, where you were his chief of staff, Tony.
Yeah. So they got that connection there. So I've always been very interested in 92. Very interesting in Kaysen winning without a runoff. You know, getting in despite it being a three-way race. Turning focus to another race where conservatives have a lot of, we've been paying a lot of attention to it, is the race for HD 60, where John Francis coming in first place, but not avoiding a runoff.
John Francis falling just short of winning outright in that election. He'll go to a runoff against Glenn Rogers, a veterinarian, who had actually filed to run against Mike Lang up there while he was the incumbent state lawmaker. Lang, of course, deciding not to run for reelection and ultimately to run for county commissioner instead. But Brandon, he's going to run off as well.
Yeah, he was unable to completely win outright, right? So you have John Francis coming in just under 50%, and you've got Glenn Rogers, I think, somewhere in the 30s, low 30s, something like that. He'll be entering the runoff as well. Very interesting to see, though, how the lines have been drawn in that race, right? Because on one side, you have John Francis, who's been a longtime conservative activist known in the district. On the other hand, you have this establishment guy, a guy who like Carrie pointed out, came in to run against a conservative, now having a little bit of a problem kind of being able to identify himself and find his identity in that race. But this is somebody who has some establishment backing, no doubt, right? You even see a former Governor Rick Perry out there, you know, kind of putting videos out for him, and you see a Farm Bureau sending him money. And so, you know, even though you saw Francis win first place, and conservatives can definitely celebrate that victory, the work's not done, and you know they're going to be fighting till the end in May.
Yeah, very interesting. A couple of the other candidates in that race, Kelly Sorrell,
yes,
and Chris Perricone, running there, have already come out and endorsed Francis.
Yes, and so you see a lot of the support circling around Francis. Very, very clear how the lines are drawn in this race. Definitely a conservative versus liberal establishment election.
Yeah, so a couple other races to touch on that were pretty interesting. Speaker Dennis Bonin, you know, embroiled in scandal, decides to announce he's retiring from the legislature. His race was very contested down in HD 25 of Brazoria County. His preferred candidate missing the runoff there. Very interesting.
Yeah, you know, our sources down there have said pretty much, right, that this guy, this Troy, by the name of Troy Brimage, was Bonin's preferred successor. And you saw, even though Bonin not being on the ballot, you saw, you know, maybe people in his district maybe still like him. Kind of tough to tell. Turns out it didn't really matter. His preferred candidate, not even making the runoff, getting third place. It looks like you're going to have Robin Garrett came in first place, who is a tax assessor, I believe, down there. Has been an elected official for a long time. And then Cody Vassut, a city council man in Angleton, also going to be in that runoff. You know, conservatives, you know, some conservative organizations were looking at Rhonda Seth. Rhonda Seth was somebody who got in the race when Bonin was still in. And unfortunately, her campaign never really taking off, you know, from a practical perspective. There were some troubling kind of, you know, expenditures and campaign strategies that I think, you know, you can look back now after the election and say probably were not helpful, even though, you know, outraising the other opponents by a very, very significant margin, still only getting fourth place in that five-person race.
Yeah, very interesting there. Let's talk, I guess, brief mention here. We've been involved. This is our first cycle with endorsements. We do our endorsements for the legislature with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, but new organization, Texans for Courageous Courts, making endorsements. Pretty good night, actually, for the Texans for Courageous Courts endorsees. Of course, we'd endorse Gina Parker, who's running against Burt Richardson for Court of Criminal Appeals. She came up short, but in the Court of Appeals and in the district courts, all of the candidates endorsed by Texans for Courageous Courts making their runoffs in those open races. And so I think we'll definitely be putting a focus on that heading into the runoff. And then I think having to take a look at some more of these races. There were a ton of open races across the state that we didn't necessarily get involved in, but that I think we'll probably get involved in and take a look at getting involved in as we narrow that down to the runoffs.
Yeah, absolutely, Tony. You know, at Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, we have the perspective that if we want to make an endorsement, it needs to be the clear conservative candidate. And oftentimes in these races, you don't have a clear conservative candidate, maybe because there are no conservative candidates, or maybe you have a good problem where there are too many conservative candidates. Mm-hmm. So, for example, here in Austin, in House District 47, running to take out Vicki Goodwin in a seat that Republicans held but lost in 2018. You actually had three candidates who could claim the conservative mantle. We decided to just leave it to the will of the voters and not interfere in that election. You did see, too, for Texans for Courageous Courts, there were a number of courts there of which we said, you know, we've got two viable candidates. We're not going to choose between them, and we'll see how the voters choose it. We will probably be making more endorsements here as we continue this runoff election and as we approach the November election of, you know, candidates who are running as conservatives and we believe the voters ought to support.
Yeah, very, very interesting. So something that folks definitely should be checking out, empowertexans.com. More endorsements going up there for each of these organizations. Real quick, before we finish, something that was on the ballot didn't get a lot of attention were the propositions. And these are non-binding propositions, so you might go, well, What does that matter? But I think you had a very interesting perspective on it, Kerry.
Yeah, so actually a lot of these propositions did fantastically well. The best performing proposition was the ban on taxpayer-funded lobbying, which it's got about 94%. So that outperforms literally every Republican on the ballot who was opposed, other than maybe Donald Trump. He might have edged it out as people were excited to vote for him, might not have gone all the way down the ballot. But so this is important because eliminating taxpayer-funded lobbying has more support in every single district of the state than every member of the Texas House, every member of the Texas Senate, every member of the Texas congressional delegation. And this is something that I believe lawmakers should pay attention to and serve their constituents. They would well serve themselves by serving their constituents and taxpayers by addressing it in the Texas legislature.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you guys joining me and covering these issues. And folks, just go check out any more of the coverage there at texasscorecard.com. And then, of course, more endorsements as we get into the runoffs at empowertexans.com. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.